And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's very good to be with you this Saturday morning. Thanks for taking time out of your day to tune in. I cannot get the computer to work right. I don't know what to do. Anyway, so I'm skipping the... Unfortunately, I can't record the program because I don't know what's up on the screen. And my vast computer skills just haven't helped me here. That's really a joke. By the way, if you need your computer fixed today, if it's sick... Computer's not feeling so hot, don't call me. Anyway, let me share some stuff with you this morning. This stuff is just incredible. If I were to go back 30 years in time, you know, back to 1989, if I wanted to look up a topic, I would have to go to the library at the college, and I would have to, you know, pull out the cards in the Dewey Decimal System, which probably half the people listening don't even know what I'm talking about. But it would be with much effort and a pencil and paper writing down all the references, and sometimes I'd have to go to the librarian saying, I cannot find this journal from 1954. It has an article I need for my research thesis. And, man, it was just with effort. What would take me maybe 3 months of digging, trying to sort through all the data to find what I was looking for, I can do it in 30 seconds now. If you had a smartphone, it's just incredible. Sometimes I'm curious, though, if people use these smartphones just to numb their brain into having something to do, or do they use them to actually find out information that's very valuable? I know in the Old Testament, I want to say it's in Proverbs, it says, wisdom is just a little bit more valuable than gold and silver. I realize there's going to be some people that disagree with that, but that's what the Word of God says, so get wisdom. Get it. And so what I want to do is I want to share with you some of the information. And yeah, some of these studies are totally secular. Like, here's one right here. But you got to ask yourself when I read this to you, is this the sort of thing that makes sense to you? Does it ring true? Or somehow or another, do you think this is just, you know, not that relevant? Anyway, let me read this to you right here. It won't take long. The title of the article is, Forgiving Other People is Good for Your Health. Okay? Being forgiving to yourself and others can protect against stress and the toll it takes on mental health, according to a study that was found in the Journal of Health Psychology. Researchers studied the effects of a lifetime of stress on a person's mental health, looking for how more forgiving people fared compared with people who weren't so forgiving. To do this, they asked 148 young adults to fill out questionnaires that assess their levels of lifetime stress. Their tendency to forgive and their mental and physical health. No surprise, people with a greater exposure to stress over their lifetimes, they had the worst mental and physical health. You know what that means, don't you? The more stress you have, the worse your health. I'm sure you would agree. But the researchers also found that if people were highly forgiving of themselves and others, I think that's the two parts of the equation that can't be overlooked. Who are the people that you can forgive? Yourself and your other and others. This characteristic alone nearly eliminated the connection between stress and mental illness. That means if you're harboring unforgiveness, bitterness, resentment, you're going to have major mental problems and health problems. It's just the way it is. Evidently, God is right. Forgive us of our sins as we forgive those that sin against us. So basically, it's almost statistically zero effect on the person if they would only forgive themselves or others. That was according to a professor of psychology at Luther College in Iowa. His name is Lauren Toussaint. It says, if you don't have a forgiving tendencies, then you do feel the raw effects of stress in an unmitigated way. That has got to be true. One of the things that I looked at this morning before I came on the air, there's just like a million topics that I'm fascinated by, but it is so common to find people that just don't feel good. They either have significant agitation in their life every day, they're harboring anger, they have bitterness, resentment, unforgiveness. They could tell you exactly who did them wrong and how they did them wrong. They remember, you know, all the negative details. So don't really remember the positive things that happened. But sometimes they just tend to hang on to the negative. Well, here's a study right here. Just recently, there was a very small study, but in a way, it's quite groundbreaking. Australian researchers found that very simple dietary changes may even help cure depression. In the study, half of the depressed people received regular dietary counseling and were told to follow a Mediterranean-esque diet heavy on produce. That means vegetables and fruit. And they ate fish, a little bit of whole grains, and a dash of high-quality red meat. That means they did not eat red meat 3 times a day. The other half, which was called the control group, they attended regular group support meetings. Okay? After 3 months, 32% of the people in the dietary change group, the ones that were encouraged to eat vegetables and fruit and fish, they were cured of their depressive symptoms. That's called cured, compared to 8% in the control group. According to psychiatrist Drew Ramsey, MD, PhD, a psychiatrist at Columbia Medical Center in New York, and a founding member of the International Society of Nutritional Psychiatry Research, he says, if these results were for a drug, then it would get approved by the FDA immediately, and they would say, oh my goodness, this is like the greatest thing of all time. Now, I want you to listen to this right here, because we need to connect the dots. So if something about your body is not right or your health is not right, it's going to be really good for you to sit up and take notice and ask the question, well, why? So one of the buzzwords that I read all the time now is recognizing that inflammation plays a huge role in health. And so on one level, inflammation is really good. If you're walking barefoot and you step on the fang of a water moccasin, I'm just joking, I shouldn't have said that. The water moccasin would be inserting his fangs into you. You better hope that there's an inflammatory response trying to capture and bind and neutralize the protein toxins and the venom of the snake. Or if you have like a splinter or a thorn. Well, inflammation serves a good role. It helps your immune system get down to the injured area so it can heal it and repair it to prevent things like a staph infection or an E. coli infection. Just take your pick. So now they have dozens of studies and they're linking high levels of inflammatory markers in the blood to depression. Well, what would some of those markers look like? Well, for example, if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, we're going to do some labs on you today since you're not feeling so hot, and because we want to try to find out or figure out why do you not feel well. And so you say, thank you, doctor. And so what if it comes back at your white blood cell count is a little bit elevated? Well, that would be a pretty good clue that there's some inflammation going on. Number two, there's a very simple, it's been done a long time, it's easy to do in the lab, it's called sedimentation rate. Sometimes it's called sed rate for short. But what if you come back with a high sed rate level? Well, that means you've got very significant inflammation. For some people, the one clue that something is inflaming their blood and their tissues is their platelet level is kind of at the higher end of normal or a little bit high. For other people, there's a pretty fancy new marker called C-reactive protein. Now, that one is showing to be pretty accurate. And so if C-reactive protein, sometimes it's called HS, C-reactive protein. The HS stands for high sensitivity. But if that comes back high, then there's something that's driving inflammation or kind of throwing the body in disrepair. And so here's this study they published in 2009. It was published in the Journal of Biological Psychiatry. That sounds like one that I probably need to order. British researchers actually caused people to be in a bad mood by boosting inflammation. I don't know if you get that. They purposely tried to make them inflamed to see if it would affect their mood. So what they did was, I know it's a small study, but hey, I like it. They took 16 healthy, happy participants. Did you get the criteria to be in the study? You had to be healthy and happy. As simple as that. So they took 16 healthy and happy participants, and then they injected them, get this, with a common vaccine to trigger an immune response and inflammation. Now, I need to go back and look at the study and find out what the vaccine was, but this morning I went into a very large store, and guess what was right there at the pharmacy? Come and get it. We'll give it to you today, your flu shot. Well, so what they did was they took these 16 very, very happy individuals, they gave them a vaccine, and they know that when you get a vaccine, it's going to trigger an immune response and generate inflammation because your body's trying to protect you and save you. So then the researchers just kind of sat back and they watched as these participants' happiness went into the tank, although that was temporarily. But isn't that interesting? They know now that inflammation drives depression and anxiety and a foul mood and anger and all these emotions. So maybe we can start asking the question, well, what's driving the inflammation? Well, obviously, if you're in a foul mood today and you just had a flu shot yesterday, well, you might connect those dots, but what if that's not the case? Well, let me pass this on to you right here. Because, you know, I would rather focus on what can we do to improve our lot. And I've just got to believe God has shown such tremendous care and precision and sophistication in the universe and the earth. Because he's given us all these things that help ease pain and suffering. They put you in a much, much better light. Okay. Listen to this right here. This kind of caught my attention. This may not mean anything to you, but to me, I thought, oh, this is intriguing right here. Well, and what I was trying to get to with the Mediterranean study earlier was the idea or the concept that eating certain vegetables and certain fruit and eating fish, it helped actually rid the body of excess inflammation. That would be as opposed to eating pancakes and waffles and donuts and Lucky Charms cereal and, you know, tons of sugar. That would be the thing that would drive excess inflammation. So they have found some very unique high antioxidant foods that have this, in addition to their antioxidant content, they have this very unique antidepressant properties. And so there was a study conducted at the Torrey Pines Institute for Molecular Studies, and they found that certain flavonoid molecules in chocolate, you get that? Chocolate? Would that be hard to convince you to eat chocolate? And also certain berries, they have these chemical structures that are so, so very similar to valproic acid, which is one of the greatest mood-stabilizing drugs or medications of all time. I wonder who figured that one out. I find that very intriguing. Now, let me share this with you right here. You know, when I examine people day in and day out and I'm trying to solve the mystery of why their health is not as good as it should be, one thing that I've learned or trained myself to look for is there any chance or possibility that they're eating something day in and day out that might be sabotaging them? So like yesterday, I think there was one woman I saw and I was just completely convinced through my testing that wheat was the culprit. That was her kryptonite. And so I tried to suggest to her, just like Superman could stop a locomotive on the train tracks because he's so strong. It's kind of hard to believe, but evidently Superman can do that. But if you put some kryptonite near Superman, all of a sudden he's so weak the train would run over him. all 185 cars. He might be a little sore after that deal, huh? But it's the idea that if you eat a certain food, what if your immune system doesn't like this food and it generates inflammation? Well, wouldn't it be worth it to kind of explore this concept? So there are some foods that have an anti-inflammatory effect, and chocolate is one of those. And usually when I test a person against chocolate, they become very excited and say, "Praise the Lord and thank you, Jesus." If that is not the food that's generating the problem, because I would say most people like chocolate. Here's a study that was done in 2013. A study in the British Journal of Pharmacology showed those who drank a dark chocolate beverage every day, they felt so much more relaxed and content than those that did not. Chocolate has been shown to have very high amounts of a substance called a polyphenol. You could say these are kind of nutrients that are found in the plants themselves. And when they gave them to some people in the study, well, here it is right here. They took individuals that were known to have chronic fatigue syndrome, and all they did was gave them chocolate. And guess what happened? It helped alleviate the symptoms of just horrible, mind-numbing fatigue. And that comes from the Nutrition Journal. Now get this right here. It says, according to a Chemistry Central Journal study, dark chocolate has more antioxidant activity than blueberries and ACI berries, which are obviously they're touted as the superfruit, superfood. One would come from, you know, North America, the other one would come from South America. And they tell you always these things are great, but even chocolate has more flavonoids than they do. Isn't that interesting? Now, let me see if I can find this other study that I was interested in right here. Okay, you know what cacao is, don't you? Cacao is what they use, you know, those are the flavonoids that contain all the polyphenols that have all these wonderful health benefits. So I think I told you before, there's a, off the coast of Panama, there's a small island where a group of people called the Kuna people live, and researchers could not figure out this puzzling effect of why they had no heart disease, yet on the in the nation of Panama, they had all these heart problems. Well, they're drinking this chocolate beverage made of cacao plants every day, even many, several cups of it probably. Here's this right here also. Studies have specifically shown that dark chocolate can reduce high blood pressure. Is anybody listening this morning that's struggling with high blood pressure? That chocolate also increases what's called HDL. That is usually called good cholesterol. It's not really cholesterol. It's a lipoprotein. But everybody calls it that, so, you know, I'm not going to argue. So, why do you want your HDL to increase? Usually studies show that if you can get your HDL to about 60 or above, then all of a sudden something magical happens in your arteries. Your body starts removing plaque and gunk from the lining of your arteries a little bit faster than when it's below 60. So there's an independent factor here that if your HDL cholesterol goes up from eating dark chocolate, your heart may actually be a little bit better shape. I don't have the study in front of me, but I remember reading they've estimated through scientific analysis that people that eat dark chocolate live on average about a year longer. I don't know if you're interested in that. You may want to live a year less. I can tell you this. Smoking two packs of cigarettes a day, that'll get you in the ground about 7 years faster. That's about the average. This is interesting also right here, because dark chocolate, it improves insulin sensitivity. Anything that improves insulin sensitivity puts you into a better place. It makes you healthier. It greatly reduces the risk of you delving into developing diabetes, which you don't want. And the other thing is, just because of these polyphenols and these flavonoid compounds that are found in chocolate, some of the studies are showing these reduce inflammation. So do you remember what I read earlier? In Great Britain, when they injected someone with a vaccine It caused him to be in a foul mood. Chocolate's the exact opposite. So, I know that they're currently trying to develop one study, probably Hershey. I'm joking about that. I don't know if they are. Somebody is trying to figure out a way to determine what the exact numbers are. So, on improving a person's mood or trying to quell depression or anxiety. But there may be a reason why, you know, you crave chocolate when you're highly stressed, because your body needs those flavonoid compounds. Please remember, you can only live as long as your arteries are spry and flexible and supple. That's as opposed to stiff, hardened, filled with calcium. You know, one of the tests that's done in medicine, I think, is just very, very spot-on accurate. It's called the calcium scoring test. I think they charge, what, $49 or $50 or $51 for it, so it's cheap. Yes, you probably need a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant or a physician to order it for you, but I actually think it's worth it. It only takes 2 or 3 minutes to do, but it accurately shows you if your body is depositing calcium on the inner lining of your heart, the arteries that feed the heart, the coronary vessels. Please remember, your body will calcify anything that stays chronically inflamed. So sometimes when I shake hands with people, it's very easy to notice that their fingers are a bit twisted and distorted and bent because of calcium deposits in their joints. So if you have arthritis, yes, that would be one example of what happens when you have excessive calcium buildup in a joint because your body is trying to counter the inflammation. Okay, I just now found the story. Cacao, which is what they use to make chocolate, it has been shown to help people even that have chronic fatigue syndrome. In a double-blind clinical study, researchers asked 10 people, in order to be in the study, you had to have severe chronic fatigue. And what they did was they rated the severity of their symptoms. And so for 8 weeks, half of the people, which would have been exactly 5, they were given a high polyphenol chocolate, and the other half were given a low polyphenol chocolate. So they all had chocolate, but one had more of the good, you know, nutrients in it, one had less. After 8 weeks, those taking the high polyphenol chocolate, they report a significant improvement in their symptoms. And they also noted a great decrease in anxiety. Folks, I'm telling you, this is so easy for me to believe. God is so good to us. The most original first form of medicine on the earth is plant-based medicine. And cacao or chocolate comes from a plant. You probably think I'm making this up, don't you? I do not get a kickback from Hershey's chocolate or Ghirardelli or whoever else is involved in those things. Anyway, let me read this to you right here. Back in 1919... start to say 1915, in the year 2015. That was like 4 years ago, give or take, right? There was a study in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health, and they found that people who ate the most fish, they were 17% less likely to have depression compared with those who ate the least. And of course, the experts suggest eating these fatty acid-rich types of fish at least twice a week to get the most benefit. And that's what they came down to. They were eating fish twice a week. Now, you may not think that's important, but let me ask you this. If you invested your money into a savings account and you came back and after a year you had lost, I should not have said a savings account, I should have said like a mutual fund, right? Or some type of fund where your income is based on how well the stocks perform or the investments. If it came back 17% lower, what if you had $100,000? If you lost $17,000 in a year, that's 17%, wouldn't that kind of freak you out and get you worried? Well, of course it would. But what if the mutual fund made you $17,000? There was a 17% increase. I mean, wouldn't you just take up and take notice of that and say, oh my goodness, I must have a genius financial planner. They know exactly which ones to pick. They have the greatest track record of all time. If it made 17%, I would probably say, are you sure this isn't a Ponzi scheme? Because that's like a pretty big return on the investment. So, just because that may not sound impressive, there was a 17%, or these people that ate fish twice a week, they had 17% less likely to be depressed or to have depressive symptoms. I want you to think about something here. The reason that I mention chocolate is not because, or cacao, is not because I'm trying to make it a panacea. But like anything else, little small habits, they kind of add up to a big result. So I need you to think about the idea of, if you're trying to maintain your health or improve your health, maybe you should consider doing something every day that will kind of move you in that direction, right? Okay, here we go right here. One of the things that's found in salmon, it's called omega-3 fatty acids. And these are unique types of fatty acids that your human body cannot make these things. It just can't. You've got to get them from the food that you're eating. So salmon is a good source of it. Now, I can tell you what type of salmon I'm not a fan of. I am not a fan of farm-raised salmon. I mean, you can eat that if you want to, but I can tell you right now, sister, it is pumped full of wicked, wicked antibiotics. And I'm not trying to be a negative doomsday person right now, but we are this close. There's but a hair between us and a massive infection that will not even respond to even the greatest, most potent antibiotics. A lot of these bacteria that I study, they're smart. They have a certain amount of intelligence, not the same that we do, but they want to live. So they're developing all these unique tricks and genetic mutations to where they can actually start eating, you know, Cipro for breakfast, or penicillin, or amoxicillin, or tetracycline. And so farm-raised salmon, it is swimming in a sea of antibiotics. I don't know if you know this or not, but when a doctor prescribes an antibiotic, and let's just say, what would be a good reason to take an antibiotic? If you're fixing to die from double pneumonia, that's a pretty good reason to take an antibiotic right there. I'd say it's a very good reason. So if you have double pneumonia and you can barely breathe, maybe an antibiotic might save your life. And that's truly what they should be reserved for. Not six times a year every time your child has a sniffle or a runny nose. That is just borderline ridiculous. That's actually, maybe that's a topic for another day, but when you take an antibiotic, your body's going to try to process this and detoxify it and get rid of it as quick as possible. And that is what your body does when toxins or poisons enter the system. Now, I realize the antibiotic is supposed to be toxic and poisonous to bacteria, not so much to you, but your body still treats it as a substance it wants to kick out, detoxify, get rid of as soon as possible. So what is it? Where does it go when it leaves your body? Well, if you're outdoors and you're far down by the creek and there's nobody looking and you're a man, you might just say, I'm not walking back up to the house to use a bathroom. I'm down here cutting firewood. I will just relieve my urine right here by this pine tree where I'm hidden from, you know, chipmunks and coyotes. So it goes on the ground. Well, over time, sunlight will break down and destroy antibiotics. But if you live in the city, every time you go to the bathroom while you're taking antibiotics, some of the antibiotic residue is going to pass right through you and go right into whatever city municipal water treatment facility they have available. I'm sure every city has one. But once it goes into the sewage treatment plant, it can't be broken down, folks. Yes, they've done studies and they've shown that if they can solidify all the waste that comes through the human, all the human waste that filled with antibiotics and drugs, if it comes through the sewage treatment plant, if they can solidify that and then they can put that into an incinerator, you almost think in terms of what they would do when they're trying to turn something into pure ashes and burn it up. Yes, that will totally destroy the antibiotics. That will remove it from the drinking water. But right now, they don't have the technology to do that. Or if they do, well, we have the technology, but they're not doing that right now. So every time you sit down at a restaurant and you take a sip of the water and you think, this doesn't taste so good, well, you're probably getting all the prescription drugs and all the antibiotics from all the people that went to the bathroom. It's just the way it is. But if you eat farm-raised salmon versus wild-caught salmon, you're really getting a quadruple dose of antibiotics that you just don't need. And over time, this weakens your body. Even the latest studies, they demonstrate and they show that when you have the person that has the most antibiotics when they're young, they have the greatest lifetime risk of cancer in their lifetime. And I'm telling you, cancer is taking over. It just is. Do you know what tea is? Well, so eat farm-raised salmon. Don't eat farm-raised salmon. You want to go for what's called wild-caught salmon. So if you're at the store and you open the freezer and pull the package of salmon out and read it, if it says wild-caught Alaskan salmon, there you go. You know, I was reading about salmon the other day. I know this is probably like a total waste of your time. Maybe I should go to the phone lines. The phone number here is 903-586-5257. I always lose track of time. So if you want to call me with a question or comment, please do so right now. Good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials.
Dr. Morgan, good morning, sir.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you. I want you to know that you are you're the consummate medical advisor that I've got. I appreciate your
You
wisdom,
mean
sir.
I am your counselor?
In many ways you are, sir. I'll tell you what. I got a couple quick comments here, then I'm going to get to why I called right here. Your comments about the depression and the anxiety, the anger factor, and how it affects our health. Years ago, I watched a neurologist on a Christian show, and she took a brain scan and showed that anger, depression, trauma actually burned holes in the nodes in your brain.
Oh my goodness.
Mm. And the happier you got, the healthier you got, the more those holes closed. It was pretty amazing, and you actually touched on that this morning. I thought, well, that might be worth commenting on.
No, I'm glad you did. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Second thing right here, your comments about chocolate right here. I've got a good friend that's been preaching at me for 6 months now about the keto diet. And he asked me to ask you what foods would be inflammatory, and I pretty much answered him for you. You know, sugars, wheats, things along that line.
Yes, good.
But I'm going to come back to him and tell him about your comments about chocolate, because he's got a thing against chocolate. He does. So
well,
that,
you the one term that I did use is called cacao. CACAO.
Yes.
You can actually go into the grocery store and you can buy like a pound of it for like $8.
Yes,
and it's
indeed, you can
organic without chemicals, so you're good to go.
Well, he'll be thrilled to know that you actually pronounced it cacao, because I've been jumping on him, and you look in Webster's Dictionary, it's often pronounced cocoa, K-O-K-O, but
and
cacao
I would
is
know,
also...
I would know what you're talking about if you said cocoa.
Yeah, I know. Well, he'll be thrilled to know there's someone else on this planet that calls it cacao. Okay. But the reason I called, sir, I'm going to put my own soap opera aside. My brother's in his 70s. He's got Parkinson's. He's undergone for about 20 years now. He's undergone experimental surgery on the brain, and that helped a lot for a while. About a month ago, less than a month, he woke up with a giant bruise that stretched from the holes in his head down over the top part of his down towards his eye.
What happened?
And they took him to the hospital and everything, and it turned out that it was shingles.
Oh dear, bless his heart.
Yeah, he's been bedridden ever since, and he's he overcomes one to get slapped down by something else. So it occurred to me that you would probably have at your fingertips some kind of lotion or ointment or suggestions as to what might just ease the
yesterday on my lunch break, a woman sent me a text. And she showed me a very severely burned arm. I did not text back and say, tell me exactly how you burned it. But she was just saying, the pain is so intense and so great, what do I do? And I sent her a text back and I said, take some gauze or a big Band-Aid, butter that sucker up with some raw honey, and put right on top of it. And she sent she sent me a text back in 10 minutes. She said, I can't believe it. The pain is 100% gone. I thought, oh, my goodness, look at what honey can do. It is incredible. So there are times that I get some people with very severe shingles on the face to respond to putting raw honey on them. And so anytime that you have an infection, whether it's viral or bacterial, always think about using raw honey topically. It's just phenomenal what it can do. Now, this is what a woman told me yesterday, and I'm just telling you, I'm so thankful to Betty for telling me this. I'd never heard this before. She said, this is the way that you test honey to see if it's real honey. It hadn't been watered down or diluted. And I said, I'm all ears. And she said, you take a spoonful of honey, you pour it or drizzle it onto a plate or a saucer, and then you cover it with a little bit of water. I said, well, what does that do? She said, if it's pure honey, you will see the grid of the honeycomb form just under the water if it's real honey.
No kidding.
Isn't it? But that's just God's great design right there.
But well, you said it.
So if you put a little bit of water on top of a spoonful of honey and it doesn't form that honeycomb grid, you know it's been adulterated or cut or diluted with something else. I remember that shipment that came in from customs, and they said they tested honey that came from China. It was actually found to be 90% rice syrup and only 10% honey. I thought, well, isn't that just a little bit deceptive? I wonder why they would do that. I wonder if honey sells for a whole lot more dollars than what rice syrup. Well, of course it does. So you can test the honey. The other thing that I want to look at, castor oil is a godsend for shingles, and he can apply that topically. And the thing of it is, your brother, I don't know how well he can use his mind, but usually with Parkinson's they can. And so if he can just find a way to get raw honey and castor oil on those lesions, let's see if we can get those healed up just as fast as possible. Has he had just a lot of stress here lately as far as new stress?
He's a type A personality. He's a scientist, and praise God, he's
probably brilliant.
Well, yeah, he is. I'm on the other end of the spectrum, you understand, but yeah,
that is not true.
Yeah, he's way up there. Stress has always been a big part of his life. There's no doubt about that. And I understand stress is a trigger for shingles.
It is. It's absolutely the number one predictor. When you have the severe overwhelming stress, that's when shingles hits.
Well, we think it was stress that triggered the Parkinson's because of a deal with his business at one time. And gosh, he lived with that for up until about year and a half ago, when he Michael J. Fox Foundation paid for some experimental brain surgery on him, and it took care of about half of the half of him. And he's thinking about going in and doing the other half to deal with the other stuff. But he's a little he's stressed out, really worried about how much cognitive the memory, the use of the brain, and some of the physical responses are going to cost him by doing the other half of the surgery. But he's still got a full life, in other words. So working on his third wife, so he's got kids that stretch from the mid-50s down to 11. So I think that's pretty incredible as it is.
Well, he's got a reason to live, doesn't he?
Yes, sir, he does. Raw honey and castor oil, I will pass it on to him.
Good
right there.
Good deal.
Doctor, thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your... I appreciate your phone call, and thanks for your love for your brother. You're a good brother.
Take care.
You too, buddy. Bye. This one study that's in front of me, it says cacao, which is what they use to make chocolate, not only helps your mood, but also improves your cognitive function. If you don't know what the term cognitive function means, that means your ability to be alert and carry on a conversation, remember things, and hold someone's attention. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. My husband, he has just found out that he has an enlarged prostate, and they put him on antibiotics. But what can we do so that it'll go away?
How old is he?
He's 49.
He's practically a teenager.
Yeah.
If the antibiotics, if they greatly reduce the size of his prostate, then what he has is a condition called prostatitis.
Okay.
But it's because of an infection. And I want to tell you a story real quick. It's not a pleasant story. And I can assure you the character in the story will remain nameless, okay?
Yeah.
Back in the early 90s, there was a doctor here in Jacksonville that I know pretty well, but I'm not going to mention his name because it might give away who he actually is. He encountered one year 14 men that had severely swollen prostates. And so he did something that was considered slightly illegal. What he did was, at the time, there was no laboratory that was testing prostate fluid for infections. And I'm not going to tell you how we get the prostate fluid. Just use your imagination.
Okay.
And so what I did, what this doctor did was, he recommended that they get a test from the lab. It was called a female vaginosis profile. But it actually fit the bill, because what happened was, these men could capture their prostate fluid in this test tube, send it off to the laboratory, and it had like this little fluid in there that would help ensure that the specimen would remain fresh. And as soon as it gets to the laboratory, the microbiologist of the laboratory takes a nutrient auger petri dish. It's like a little round dish with a cover
yeah.
over it. And they will just take the loop and stick into the fluid, shake it around, and they would just kind of smear it all over the nutrient auger petri dish, put the lid on it, and write the name, "This is a 49-year-old man." Or whatever his name is, stick it in the incubator, and they'd come back in a couple of days and say, "Oh my goodness, would you believe me if I told you 13 of those 14 studies came back that they had very high levels of one particular unique bacteria, and the name of that bacteria is called Klebsiella pneumoniae," which you can kind of tell from the word pneumonia, you're thinking, well, isn't that what would be linked to pneumonia? Yeah. So you're thinking, well, what is it doing in the prostate? Well, anyway, you know how I might say frequently that the original medicine on the planet is plant-based medicine, meaning somebody figures out that if they chew on this particular plant, it kind of helps with a bad toothache, or if they consume this substance, it clears their sinuses, or like in the book of Genesis, Leah's oldest son, Reuben, is out in the field, and he finds some mandrakes, and guess who wants them? Oh, my goodness, Rachel wants them, because if you eat a mandrake, everybody knows that it greatly increases your fertility, and I'm going to have a son and name him Joseph. So all these things have been well studied, but we've kind of lost the art of how to make this work. But back in the early 90s, this physician I know, he would recommend very specific herbs that would tend to target removing Klebsiella pneumoniae from the prostate. And so there's part of it I forgot to tell you, sorry. There's a type of a test called minimum inhibitory concentration, and all they do is on that petri dish where they find all these bacteria that are toxic or growing, they would put a disc of an antibiotic like penicillin or like Cipro. But then again, some of the crazy labs, you know, ones that I like, they would actually take a little disc of garlic or plant tannins or berberines or golden seal or echinacea or something that would have antibiotic properties to it. And so if this particular Klebsiella pneumoniae responded to berberines, and this particular doctor said, why don't we try giving you some berberines to see if it can actually permeate and penetrate the prostate and help create an environment where your body can kick out these Klebsiella pneumoniae. And so the way that this doctor got in trouble with is one of the patients went back to his
regular doctor
and said, "Hey, I'm cured." And the doctor said, "Oh my goodness, my genius prescriptions of antibiotics and prostate drugs work like a champ." He said, "Well, I didn't take those. I did this other thing this other guy told me about." So he got a visit from the board of examiners, and they kind of scolded him, saying that's potentially practicing medicine without a license, which technically it is not. There was nothing. But it's different than the standard of care, though, right?
Yeah.
And so with prostate infections, there's two or three things that I always think of. And do you have a pencil handy?
Yeah.
All right. There is a particular herbal remedy that comes from a seed-bearing plant called Cida acuta.
S-I-D?
A. S-I-D-A.
Okay. Cida Acuta.
Acuta.
A-C-U-T-A.
You got it. Hey, you spell better than I do.
Oh.
I'm going to need you to take notes for this radio program from here on out. That way you can get the correct spelling down.
Well, I grew up in South America, so I speak Spanish. So I also.
Are you kidding me? I knew you sounded like a genius the moment you called.
So.
Buenos dias, senora.
Yeah.
Okay, so. And so the other one that might be, they're called berberines. Let's see if I can spell it.
Is it B-E-R?
Yep.
B-E-R-E-I-N-S.
I-N-E. B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E. Berberine.
I-N-E. Okay.
So there's like Oregon grapefruit would probably have lots of berberines. But that is very, very effective in trying to create the environment. The other one that I always think of, and we have these everywhere around here, they're called juniper. Juniper berries are awesome. Actually, I have a textbook right here. It's top secret, though. I can't tell you what the name of it is because you would read it, too, and you would be a genius like I am not. No, I'm joking. Okay, the one, the two ones that show the greatest ability are Cryptolepis and berberine.
Crypto what?
Crypto. Can I spell that for you?
Yeah.
It's CryptoLepis. Crypto. Cryptolepis.
So, Cryptolepis.
Yeah, Cryptolepis.
Okay. Yeah.
Like a leper. Sorry.
Okay.
And so these things, and let me go backwards just for a second. So your doctor, I mean his doctor is saying, here's what we want you to do. We're going to put you on Cipro, young man, because we know that antibiotic is very good for the urinary tract of a male. And we're going to zap you with that big time. The problem is he'll probably start crying like a baby within about 2 weeks and feel horribly depressed because that drug...
Yeah, whatever it is.
Is he really emotional all of a sudden?
He's noticed that he's feeling more depressed. And
oh, my goodness. Yeah, if I want to take a man that was a strong, vibrant man's man and make him depressed and lay on the floor and weep and cry and do nothing, I'd give him Cipro. Anyway, Cipro is only one molecule. Only one molecule. And so, here's what I'm convinced of. There is no way on God's green earth that that drug is going to work forever because bacteria are smart. And they're going to figure out a way to be able to figure out that one molecule and say, okay, this is like rat poison that contains warfarin. You know, rats can eat that stuff now, and they just get stronger.
Yeah.
So the bacteria can figure out how to solve that mystery of that one single molecule, how to defeat it. But when it comes to Cryptolepis or Cyta acuta or taking, of course, I always like ginger with this because it helps get all that gunk out of the prostate. You notice I call it gunk. I didn't call it the other stuff. But all these molecules in nature... There might be 10,000 unique ingredients in the things that I mentioned. Bacteria is never going to figure that stuff out. Never, ever, ever. This is God's grand design. So our faith is going to have to shift from all these antibiotics that are just causing men to be cripples and have more health problems. But those things that I'm telling you about are really, really good. There's a technique called a sitz bath, S-I-T-Z. And when the prostate's swollen, what you do is you just kind of immerse your bottom in a tub of hot water. And, you know, when you get out, yes, his bottom will be beet red. Please do not take pictures on your cell phone and send them to me. I don't need to see that.
I wouldn't do that anyway. Gross.
I know. That's gross. But I get people send me pictures all the time. I'm going, I didn't need to see that. What are you... But a sitz bath is something that greatly increases blood flow and circulation of the prostate. Now... Another thing that I always think of is I am a huge fan of bee pollen when it comes to trying to heal the prostate.
Okay.
That means he would eat it orally or orally take the bee pollen like a spoonful a day.
Okay.
Even if it's just one heaping teaspoon, that would be a much better situation than maybe what he is in right now. And from the mineral kingdom, if I say that I believe that zinc is absolutely the greatest cornerstone of a man's immune system, you just can choose to say, I agree with Dr. Morgan. But zinc is so, so critical. And one of the tissues in the body that requires adequate amounts of zinc to be able to keep itself free from infection or from swelling is the prostate. Yeah.
Okay.
So whatever women have with the uterus, men have the same issues with their prostate. So, you know, when the uterus contracts, out comes a baby. And when the prostate contracts, out comes a bunch of little swimming swimmers. So those are some things that you should try right there. And the other thing, and I'm just going to say this word, I am not trying to be a weirdo, but it's going to have to be drained, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
You can go on YouTube and type in how to drain the prostate.
Okay.
Anyway, this is a family program.
Yeah. Okay, so that's, and we switched his diet. I mean, he doesn't eat a lot of junk anyway, but to veggies, and he's been eating fish because he can't. The regular meat, it's been hard on him because he thought it was his colon. And then he went in to the, not his regular doctor, but to the, not emergency room, the other one, a clinic to, so he could get in right away. And then they, after explaining just a few seconds of what happened, and the guy said, "Oh, it's your prostate." So he goes in a couple weeks to the regular doctor. So,
did he do like a lab test to measure like a white blood cell count or anything like that to kind of confirm an infection?
No.
He just passed go and said, "We're going to put you on Cipro."
Yeah. Well, and they did it. They sent his, a urine test, but that's about it. So,
did the urine test show the presence of infection?
Or was it
suggestive?
Know.
Okay. They didn't get back
with
you.
That's what he thought. He just said that he thought it was just an infection. So,
okay.
Then he gave him that Ciprofloxacin, whatever.
I just call it Cipro for short.
Yeah, it's too weird of a name. So
I tell you what, I've seen strong men fall to the ground and cry like babies on Cipro. Now, that doesn't mean I'm faulting them because, you know, we're only human. But if you want to devastate somebody, Cipro is one of the drugs that can do that. It can also maybe save a life occasionally.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll tell him, I'll give him this information. He can decide. I'm sure he's going to want to do everything. So
I'm pretty sure he's going to want to do everything I'm talking about today.
Cause I just hope he decides to stop using the drugs.
Well, you know, legally, I can't tell a person not to take a drug, but you know what? You're telling me specifically the doctor prescribed the drug without any testing of the prostate at all. There was no blood work. He didn't do any follow-up. And, you know, and I mean, it's easy for me to say these things because I'm looking at it after the fact, so. But I don't even understand how decisions are made if we're just going to not even try to examine a patient and just pass and give them a drug.
Yeah.
So. I'm rooting for your husband, though.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I bet you he's a great, great man, isn't he?
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. Apparently flopped over trying to push the button. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Just for your own curiosity, well, we'll go to the phone lines. That's more important. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. I just snuck in. How are you?
Good. Your voice sounds a little familiar. Have we ever spoken before?
Sir, twice, maybe, you know, in another lifetime.
You mean like 20 years ago, maybe?
Maybe a little sooner than that.
Okay, I'm with you. Anyway, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing good. Dad has what I'm calling the East Texas cough, where it's not a dry cough, and he brings up junk every so often, but he's done the antibiotic from the doctor and that, and the little pearl cough things, and that helped for a little bit, but he's not doing any of that anymore, and it's not going away.
Well,
I've heard a lot about it.
He gave it a shot, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Well, I mean, if you try everything your physician tells you to do and you're still not better... Well, I have a radical idea for him.
Sure. You know I like radical.
Well, I mean, since your father's not on the phone, you and I can kind of plot and conspire to try to trick him into getting well, right?
That would be
Okay. That would be evil? Okay. I'm all in then. Completely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There is an herb that's called mullein.
Mullein, okay.
A lot of times, mullein is very, very famous for growing where a forest fire has just destroyed and ravaged a forest, or where there's been a large burn. Sometimes when I drive down I-20, I see where somebody probably tossed a cigarette out the window, and three-fourths of a mile of the side, or the grass on the side of the road, is just burnt to a crisp. But mullein is a plant that always comes back after there's been massive damage to the surface of the earth.
Right.
And so a lot of times we hear that the rainforest or forest, that's the lungs of the earth. So mullein is the unique plant, and I think we should take note of that. So we could give your father a mullein tea. We can give him mullein in the form of a tincture. That's probably going to be the biggest bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, you know, I know that you have nothing better to do than to make your father a fresh lemonade of perfectly loving hand-squeezed lemon juice.
Oh, that sounds good.
Well, I want to give it to him, though.
Oh, fine.
Oh, well, you can make a double portion.
Double batch. Yes. There you go.
And so if he could sip on lemon, lemon's going to act like a solvent to help cut through that. Now, if I had to choose one thing as a sweetener, I would choose honey. And you're probably going to think I'm nuts, but study after study shows chronic coughs that won't go away. Sometimes honey is one of the best remedies of all time.
I'm in full agreement. I have a lot of it in my house.
Have you ever done that test before where you take water and put on top of honey to see if it forms a honeycomb?
No, I've not.
I'm going to do that today and see if it's true or not.
Okay.
If Betty did not tell me the truth, I'm going to be very upset with her. Not really. And so if you'll get some mullein tea for your father, if he can start sipping that. Now, if because of the taste of it, he says, son, tell me where you keep the honey, because I think I'm going to need some in order to drink this stuff that Dr. Morgan's recommending. But if you'll start giving him mullein very faithfully, let's see if this doesn't heal his lungs and put him in a much better place.
Cool. Yeah, I know everybody's calling it, you know, allergies and stuff. He's always had bad sinuses all of his life, all of my life. So I just thought, I'm going to call Dr. Morgan and get an answer.
What if you made him some fresh guacamole and then you snuck in a big spoonful of green wasabi sauce and didn't tell him?
That might not go too well.
For who?
He might not like that.
Oh. Well, we could clean out his sinuses in like about 5 minutes, though.
Oh, I know.
You mean, but he might be a little bit upset, like, son, you just totally tricked me. I thought this was fresh guacamole. Oh,
you totally burned my face off?
Now, he wouldn't eat a Chicago-style pizza if it was given to him, would he?
If it was a thin crust, he'd be all over it.
Like a duck on a June bug?
Pretty much.
Okay. I know you wouldn't eat those things.
Oh, never. Because they're so healthy.
It's a whole different level of evil wickedness, isn't it?
And we love it.
Well, if you will go by the health food store and pick up a tincture of mullein, if it's preserved in alcohol, I am convinced that it will be more potent than if it's in glycerin.
Okay.
But I realize not everybody can tolerate alcohol.
Right. Okay.
But if he can start sipping on that, tell me if within a couple of days if we have a new appreciation for mullein.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Buddy.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. I appreciate you so much. Be safe on the road today if you're driving.
I'm on the way to go get the car worked on.
Okay, well, I hope it works out great.
Thank you. God bless.
You're welcome. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I can almost tell that man is driving a car called a Toyota. I don't even think I've ever heard of somebody having an engine problem or a transmission problem as driving a Toyota. This program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan, Lord willing. And we'll be back here at 7 o'clock next week. Thank you so much, and everybody have a great weekend.